The Vietnam War, it's over. Your job just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
This episode contains explicit language. Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, May 12th, the How Rude edition. I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the homeschool and family travel blog Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom to three littles, Henry, who's 10, Oliver, who's 8 today. Yay, Oliver. And Teddy, who's 5. We live in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
I'm Zach Rosen. I live in Detroit, Michigan, where I make the Best Advice Show podcast. My daughter is 4. Her name is Noah, and my son Ami is 1.
I'm Amber O'Neill Johnston, and I blog at heritagemom.com, and I wrote the book, A Place to Belong. My kiddos are 12, 10, 8, and 6, Nina, Sasha, Beckett, and Brooks, and we live outside of Atlanta, Georgia.
And Amber, I'm just so excited to have you on the show this week.
Yay!
Welcome.
For coming. So I have to tell a funny story that Amber and I are like Instagram friends. She was one of the first people I found when I was kind of exploring homeschooling. And then I had messaged her a couple times about things on Instagram, and she's always wonderfully gracious. And then I sent her like the weirdest message because I was really panicking before I'd gone to bed about some homeschool stuff. And she was in my dream. And I woke up and I was like, I have to tell her. But she was like in this large lecture hall and came up and said, "You're doing a great job. Keep going," like in my dream. And I messaged her and I was like, "You're probably going to block me now."
Not at all. I was like, "That's pretty cool. I hope I have my hair done."
But yeah, I was like, "It looked great. You look so beautiful." It was like such a calming, just following your homeschool journey and seeing the things you've done. And listeners may know, I've actually recommended your heritage packs before, which I know we'll get to talk about later. But Amber should be familiar to many of you that are listening, even just from things we've recommended on the show. Well, our letter writer today is actually a non-parent. She babysits a 10-year-old and is sick and tired of his after-school attitude. She wants to know how to handle the situation so they can have a good time and be in a good place when mom gets home. Then on Slate Plus, we're looking ahead as we figure out what to do with the kids for the next few months. Join us for some tips, tricks, and lamenting about the lazy, hazy days of summer. Here's a sneak peek of what you'll hear if you have Slate Plus.
When we're at home, the children are typically knee-deep in some type of passion project. So last year, one of the kids was making soap, and saponification and lye and all of that caustic stuff you're not supposed to let your kids play with. And the other one was learning how to care for goats at a goat farm.
Oh my God. Amazing.
If you want a weekly bonus segment from us and your other Slate favorites, consider signing up for Slate Plus. You'll also get to listen ad-free and get unlimited access to the Slate website. To sign up now, go to slate.com/momanddadplus. Again, that's slate.com/momanddadplus. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll dive into our triumphs and fails of the week.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now: getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So, just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you're new to our show, welcome. Whether you're a parent, educator, or just interested in this wild journey, we're so glad to have you. Here on Mom and Dad Are Fighting, we share our parenting triumphs and fails, offer some advice, and share recommendations of things we love. We're here twice a week on Monday and Thursday, so subscribe to never miss an episode.
We're back and moving on with some parenting stories from our week. Amber, as our guest, do you have a triumph or fail to share with us this week?
I am going to go with the triumph. So,
love it.
Yeah, a few months back, my kids, one of my oldest ones, decided she wanted to try out for a musical production. And she practiced and watched the musical 8 million times, and she was all ready for the audition. Her sister was like, I'll just ride along with you guys. And, you know, when she got there, they said, well, do you want to audition? She was like, okay. And the little sister got the starring role. And the big sister, who had been working and working and cared all about it, got a really minor role. And so the production is this week, and I'm going to call it a triumph because over these months, I have been coaching big sister to rock that small role like it was Hollywood. And she's doing that. And so the sisters are getting along. We're all chipping in and going to all these rehearsals all week, and it feels good. Feels like a win to me.
That is a huge one. How did Big Sister take it when it first happened?
Girl.
Not good.
It was not good. I was like, I had to call my mom on that. I was like, Mom, she's not pulling it together. I mean, she went berserk. She lost it. I'm not going to lie.
I mean, that I would think that's like really frustrating. I mean, in life, that's frustrating.
Yes. Really.
And then when it's your sister.
It is. And then the other sister was like, I don't know. I think because she didn't care, she just went in there and was like, loose and comfortable and just kind of threw out the audition. But the one who cared so much was tense and awkward.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Are we allowed to know what the production is?
Yes, it's Matilda Jr.
Ooh.
Yes. So cool. my younger daughter is Matilda.
Incredible.
So amazing.
That sounds like a really fun play. And what a role. Matilda is like one of the great heroes of that of children's literature.
Tell me about it. And she didn't even practice for the audition. She was just watching YouTube with her sister.
So good.
Such a good story. Oh man, that's amazing. Okay, Zach, triumph or fail?
This is a triumph because my daughter is in preschool and we have been living in a plague, and therefore I have not been inside her class since she started school.
Oh my gosh.
So it's just been, I've just been kind of like guessing at how her life has been, because I mean, we get these beautiful updates from her teacher via email, and I get like pretty much jack shit from Noah in, you know, what she'll tell me about her day. Sometimes she'll give me a couple details, but usually it's pretty minimal. I mean, you know, but I know that she likes school a lot. And so finally today we went to the school's May Day celebration. Her school has like pagan fairy vibes. She goes to a Waldorf school, which is really fun for early childhood education. I think I got to like go into her outdoor classroom. They've been outside for like all of COVID, even in the winter. It's amazing. She's become very tough and has a really cute snowsuit for the winter, but now it's beautiful out. And I got to see what she's like interacting with her classmates for the first time. They did a little dance around the maypole and sang these songs, and we brought snacks, and I got to hang out with the parents and got to just like sit with her and have snack inside her classroom. Something that I have just been waiting to do since, when did she start? In September. And so today was like a day that was a long time coming, and I hope that I get to see more of her school life in this way. And I hope that, you know, classrooms for all you out there begin to open up like ours is. Because, man, there's just been a closed door between she and I for this whole time. And it was opened a bit today, and it was really nice to be let in.
My youngest also attends a Waldorf-inspired forest kindergarten. So I was really interested when you were saying that.
I think the Waldorf stuff fits so nicely with so much of what we all enjoy doing, being outside and and having the kids be creative and chasing their passions has been a nice thing for us as well.
Indeed.
Well, I'm just gonna take mine as a triumph. We had a crazy new camp adventure for Mother's Day. I wanted to go down to Great Sand Dunes National Park, so we rented a big Airbnb down there in Alamosa, which is not exactly like the beacon of civilization, but we found this great house with six bedrooms, went down with some friends, and my dad was there, and my girlfriend's dad was there. It was very fun. But we got to the sand dunes, and it has been so windy in Colorado, and the temperatures are going from, like, you wake up, it's like in the 30s in the morning, and then it's like 70 in the afternoon. So we got to sand dunes really early and had like a good hour without any wind. And we put up this beach tent and the kids ran off into the dunes. And this time of year, there's a creek that actually the snow starts to melt and a creek forms running through sand dunes and you can go play. And our kids had not really like played at the beach since we moved from Florida last year. And so they were all excited to be playing with their sand toys. We're having a great time. And then the wind started to pick up like so much that it broke one of the tents of my beach tent, like one of the poles of the beach tent broke, which we had like put up in hurricanes in Florida. Like there was so much wind and I was just thinking like, this is going to be a disaster. My legs were all red from the sand just like hitting me. And my girlfriend that was with us said, like, let's take the top of the beach tent, it's like fabric, and string it between our two minivans and we'll like put out the beach chairs and we can just like hang out there kind of where one parent could be out in the water. And it was great. We did that. We had a lovely picnic. We ended up like stopping a ranger and asking for some hikes that were kind of in the woods, more sheltered. We found a couple of great hikes that we probably wouldn't have done otherwise. And the kids were just like so great. And it made me remember why I like to be out with them. Like that works so much for us, is like being in this location and not worrying about like, are they learning something, and just like letting them be in a place. And the whole drive home, like they were talking about the things they had seen and they chose to listen to this audiobook in the car. It was just like all these little things like as a family that we got to do. And I was like, oh yeah, this is why I love this so much. So I'm taking it as a win. It's just a
three
wonderful
wins.
Mother's Day. Yeah, three wins. It was a wonderful Mother's Day to just be, even though it was like a lot of work. It was great. So triumph week.
I'm such an idiot. I haven't even asked you about Mother's Day, both of you. Happy belated Mother's Day. I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
We just had Mother's Day.
You texted Jamila and I like a wonderful co-host. So credit there.
But just real quickly, I'm curious about this. I've been talking to moms and I hope you can be honest. I've heard two different answers about an ideal Mother's Day. One of them is getting some damn time alone because it's so hard to do that. And another one is like spending time with my kids. And I feel like a lot of mothers like, you know, won't ask for alone time, even if they want it, because they feel, you know, like they need to be there for their family. So tell me, like, what's an actual ideal Mother's Day for you two?
The funny thing is that early on, I used to think, why on earth would a mother want to go away to a hotel alone on Mother's Day? I am never going to be that type of mother because I love my children and I'm just going to want to be with them all the time. And now, fast forward, I'll have my first teenager this year. I've been at it a moment. And though I did spend all day with them hiking outside and all that, it was great and lovely, but I wanted nothing more than to go and be alone in a hotel. That would have been the creme de la creme for me.
I echo everything she just said. It was a perfect Mother's Day being with them, but like, given like, if I were told you can do whatever you want, see ya, I would be in a hotel with people bringing me food and just reading and doing the things I want to do, knitting, watching stuff on TV that I never have time to watch, like those sort of things, just for a day of rejuvenation. Oh my gosh. Well, a triple triumph week and a happy Mother's Day. We hope all of you listeners had a wonderful Mother's Day. And this is our lesson. Next year, we're going to ask for what we actually want.
Let's do it.
You can hold me accountable. It probably won't happen.
Let's get these moms a hotel room.
Yeah.
Well, let's take another quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get into today's listener question.
Hey, Care and Feeding listeners, it's me, Lucy Lopez. What do ASMR, AI chatbots, and diet culture all have in common? They are all topics explored on Embodied, the Ambie Award-winning weekly podcast from WUNC, North Carolina Public Radio. Each week, acclaimed reporter Anita Rao holds up her journalistic lens to all kinds of things that are sometimes hard to talk about, like sex, health, and relationships. Embodied dives into what some consider taboo to answer important questions about our bodies and our society. Nothing's off limits. Hear from expert guests, including doctors, historians, and psychologists, as they break down everything from the dynamics of egg donation, how couples combat mental health struggles like schizophrenia and OCD, and the profits and pitfalls of the self-care industry. If you need a place to start, I highly recommend checking out the recent episode where Anita interviewed two couples who continued to choose each other after one partner came out as trans. So go ahead, follow Embodied and get new episodes every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
Okay, should we hear our listener question? It's being read as always by the fabulous Shasha Leonard.
Dear Mom and Dad, I'm not a parent, but a nanny with a question about building a positive relationship with a cranky and rude 10-year-old boy. I do school pickups twice a week, and 90% of the time, he's in a bad mood. He takes it out on me and pretty much everyone, including a single mom. It's just pure rudeness, like directed mean comments, calling names, etc. I also babysit him, and we have a good time overall with periods of rudeness and mean-spirited comments sprinkled in. He has troubles with emotional regulation, and I believe he either has ADHD or ASD. I really do care about their family, but it's getting to the point where this is not a nice work situation for me. How can I handle his rudeness? On one hand, I want to be understanding and calm while holding consequences and boundaries. But it's really hard not to get cranky, especially since he knows what he's doing is not okay. I've tried ignoring, having conversations to see the root cause, moving on, etc., but nothing seems to change, and he's very resistant to talking about his emotions and apologizing. 1. What are the best ways to respond in the moment and stay calm? 2. Should I give up on follow-up conversations and trying to get an apology and just accept that I'm not going to be able to change his behavior? 3. If I do eventually choose to move to working with another family because it's getting too much, how do I get past the feeling I'm giving up on him? I don't want him to get the message that everyone leaves or that he's too much. Thanks. Out of my league, nanny.
First of all, nanny listener, for writing in about and caring this much about a kid you're providing care for, I can already tell you're like an amazing human being.
Yep.
So kudos to you from the start. But for Amber, sure. Do you have any advice on how to handle this 10-year-old?
Well, just listening to what she was saying, the idea of how much she cares, I was going to echo what you just said. I thought was really beautiful. And it seems like other than this issue, this would be a really good fit. I think that I would talk to the mom and ask for some boundaries to be set because the nanny is a person too. And she said that she thinks the child is dealing with some things that might be a little bit out of his control in some areas and getting some help. So just knowing that the family was committing to him working with someone would probably be enough to keep me in it for a little while I gave him an opportunity to see if he could work through some of those things. Now, if they said no, that's where I may have to, you know, draw a line in terms of my willingness to remain in a what is a really an abusive situation for her.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You need to talk to this child's parent. And I think really everything you laid out here would be a really strong preliminary conversation if you haven't had one already. Like everything you've expressed here is so articulate and important, and they need to know. Because you're right, it's not up to you to change this kid. But if you're forthcoming with the parents, I think that's going to go a long way. And you're right, you need them to show you that they're committed to this and that they're and that they empathize with your plight right now. If they're just like, we hired you, like, you know, deal with it. Like, that's a red flag. So I think you'll probably learn a lot from the conversation you have with this kid's parent.
Yeah, I think talking with the mom is a really good thing I was trying to think, because we have struggled with some of this kind of behavior with our kids. And one of the things that really worked was setting kind of like some consequences that could be implemented no matter who was in the house. And for us, that came in the form of this, and I did not create the system. We call them good habits cards. And so basically we sat down together and set out rules of respect for the house. So they can be vague, they can be specific. And then we set a number of cards for each of those behaviors. So if you call someone stupid, you pick 3 cards. And these good habit cards are not things that are punishments. They are literally good habits that we're trying to reinforce. And you draw those cards and essentially your life kind of stops until you complete the cards. Now, listen, ours are like, go read for 20 minutes. We have things on there like ask mom or dad, you know, how you can be helpful, help a sibling, like also match socks. It's like we always have socks to match, like those sort of kind of good habits. And they do these things. And I think what was crucial for us was that we did not in that moment demand an apology or demand any sort of them telling us, like, I know what I did is wrong, and kind of we relied on this system and this set of rules that we had posted to understand that, like, we all know what you did is wrong. You know what you did is wrong. And we have conversations outside of these moments about how those things hurt our relationship, right? Like, if you're always treating me this way, I'm not necessarily going to want to spend my free time with you. Like, that is just, you know, or I have things to clean up now or other messes to deal with that I then don't have that time for you. Not that I don't love you, I still love you, but these are kind of these natural consequences. And what we found is that, one, the behavior stopped because they didn't want to draw cards, right? Because it's annoying if you had finished your homework and now you're going to get to go play or get to do whatever, and all of a sudden you got 5 good habits cards to do. That's really annoying. But two, we started to get these apologies naturally. And those apologies, it was like, if it came right after, we could say, like, okay, you don't have to draw a good habit card, right? Like, this was a good habit. You apologized for what you said when you were angry or whatever. So if you can have some kind of system, but why this worked for us is it was like, whether mom was home, whether dad was home, whether, you know, friend was over and helping kind of with the parenting, we all knew the rules and we could all implement the same system. So even if you don't use this one, something that you can do that the parents are also doing, so this child knows, like, this is always going to be the response. The other thing I really saw in this letter is, like, you guys, that car time after school is hard. It is hard. It is hard. I have a 10-year-old boy. Mm-hmm. It is very hard for him. And I just, when he gets in the car, I'm like, do you want to listen to some music? Like, I do not ask about the day. I do not try to force any kind of conversation about anything. I have a snack. I have some water. I just try to make that a nice time. And you know what? The less I asked, the more he started telling me. Just by making that he knew he was going to be able to get into that car and not have to explain anything to me. That doesn't mean I'm not going to ask about it at dinner or later when he's in a better mood. But there's something about, like, when I was asking all those questions when he got into the car, how was your day? Oh, you look upset. Like, all of this. He just was like, you know, back off, lady.
Yeah.
Like, stop mm-hmm. asking me. Like, I'm in this transition period. So I don't know if you can just try to be, like, you have the advantage by being the nanny of being this fun person. Like, you don't necessarily have to do all this parenting. I do think you should be in a partnership for stopping some of the rudeness, but you don't have to do that right off the bat. So if you can try to create a fun environment, maybe that'll be helpful. I don't, Amber, have you had, you've had 10-year-olds, like, do you have attitude problems with them?
Yes. And I've always wondered why no one talks about it. Everyone talks about teens and 2-year-olds, and 10 is really hard. It's a very hard time. I think they're dealing with, like, new emotions and they're wanting to grow up, but then still they can revert and act like they're 6 too, you know? Mm. So I think I wish I had been better prepared as a parent for that stage and having some difficulties there, because it was very shocking for me. I wasn't expecting it. But yes, 10 has been hard for us so far.
Are you pretty strict? Like, this is, you know, zero tolerance? Are you giving them more leeway? Like, what do you do when you're faced in that moment? Because It's like, if you haven't thought about it and they call you a name or say something, I don't know about you, but I'm just like, the anger rises and I have to think like, okay, do not board the crazy train. Like, what is happening?
Well, there have been times, you know, where I'm like, I'm a person too, and I actually need you to leave my room. You know what I mean? Like, I would like you to leave this room where I am right now. They're seeing me do the same things I need them to do. When you feel yourself about to snap, to take some space and time. But I definitely give my kids more leeway than, say, what I had. But I think we all have a point where now you've crossed the line. So I always say, you can say anything, but you can't say it any kind of way. So we can talk about anything. You can stand up for yourself. You can tell me that you think that I'm wrong. We can have all kinds of discussions, but you're not going to be just blatantly disrespectful. And I won't be that way to you either.
I love that, because it validates, like, so often the fights I get into with Henry is like, it's because of the way he said it, not what he's saying. Mm-hmm. But then we're so far down that trying to explain that to him, you know, like now he thinks I'm trying to be like, you've taken this away from me. And it's like, no, I'm willing to discuss that. So I need to, like, internalize that. Like, you're welcome to say anything to me, but not any kind of way.
Right. No, I think it's important, because I don't think that children should ever mistake us for something like a punching bag, you know what I mean? A verbal punching bag. Like, I'm your mother, but I'm an individual. My feelings can be hurt. I can get upset. I'm not a figment of your imagination. You know, this is real life, and they need to know that their words sting. And sometimes you say things and you said what you wanted to say, but it's not going to go well for you.
So. Yeah. What do we think about this nanny leaving?
I mean, you should totally do it if you're feeling like you can't, you don't want to do this. I mean, there are plenty of families in need of caring nannies who listen to parenting podcasts. But it does seem like, yeah, you don't owe them anything, but if you can explore this a little bit more with the parents, you know, things might change. But if they don't change, if this behavior continues, even after you have this conversation, then yeah, get out of there.
I agree. I mean, it's that her mental health is also important. So I think, you know, I never want to tell someone that they should ignore kind of their alarms, their internal alarms, and what they're able to deal with.
Yeah. No, I agree. I was struck by the kind of reverse of what she asks, is like, what is the message you are sending by staying, right? Like, if the verbal abuse continues and you stay, you're also sending this message that, like, people will put up with this. And I know it's hard, but you can't be in control of this boy's feelings. And it's a hard lesson. But
I think the mom might have additional insight too. I remember, you know, when we're talking about this, when I was in sixth grade, my parents did not feel comfortable with me coming home alone yet. And so they hired a college student, a really nice woman, to meet me at my house after school. I'd walk home and she would be there. Just, my mom said it was a friend, because I was like, I'm too old for a babysitter. So she was a friend. And I remember being very rude to her. And after a few weeks, she said, I know you're rude. You know, you're rude to me. You're mean to me. It seems like you don't want me here. Would you know, is this something we should talk to your mom about? And I was like, yes, let's talk to her, because I was angry. I was like harboring resentment, and it was coming out towards her. So this was anger towards my parents for giving me a babysitter in sixth grade, but I was taking it out on her. So when we had that conversation, she told my mom, we sat down and talked about it. Nothing changed. She still kept coming. We ended up being very close, because I got a chance to be heard. And to tell them that I really felt embarrassed to be coming home from school to a babysitter in sixth grade. And so that, you know, again, that points back to the idea that the mom might be able to provide more help here than what it even seems she would be able to do.
I didn't even think about, like, including the 10-year-old in the conversation, but I think that's a wonderful suggestion. Because 10 is old enough to, you know, maybe you have a conversation with the mom first and then
it's a two-parter.
Include the 10-year-old. But I do think 10 is old enough to, like, understand the challenges that this is causing as well.
Oh, yeah.
Like the consequences of that behavior, because maybe it has nothing to do with you at all.
Right. Mm-hmm. That was my point. It had nothing to do with her. Yeah, and actually, she ended up being really cool after I got that off my chest. But
once you were able to let go of that.
Yeah, like, I was like, okay. Hey, I have a college friend who hangs out with me after school. Ha ha.
Exactly. The framing is so important.
Totally.
Well, out of my league, Nanny, hopefully some of these ideas help. We'd love to know how it goes. Everyone else, do you have any tried and true tips? You can email us at momanddad@slate.com or send us a voice memo. We may play it on the show. That's also where you can send any other questions you have. And that's it for our show. We'll be back in your feeds bright and early on Monday with a great conversation about Amber's new book. And we'll, of course, have some recommendations. Be sure to tune in. While you're at it, please subscribe to the show and give us a rating and review on Apple or Spotify. This episode of Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson and Jasmine Ellis. For Zach Rosen and Amber O'Neill Johnston, I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. Thanks for listening.